I will be forever the myth.
You're the king of kings, though.
There's always a pecking order. The little peckers never mess with the big peckers. So I'm a rooster, and he's a chicken, so to speak.
Season 4, Episode 7 of the Bodybuilding Legends podcast is brought to you by our sponsors, Redcon One, Old School Labs, and Florida Alternative Medicine. All right, welcome everybody to another episode of the Bodybuilding Legends podcast. My name is John Hansen, and I'm your host. And with Season 4, we are, of course, talking about the 1990 Mr. Olympia, which was the only drug-tested Mr. Olympia in the history of the sport. And our guest today is the guy who took fourth place in that contest. His name is Mike Christian, the Iron Warrior. And Mike was one of the most popular bodybuilders in the 1980s. He won the 1984 Nationals and the 1984 Mr. Universe. And then he competed in the Mr. Olympia for several years after that. And the 1990 Mr. Olympia was actually his last Mr. Olympia before he went off to join the WBF. Many people feel that Mike was in his lifetime best condition at the 1990 Mr. Olympia. So we're going to talk to Mike and find out how he achieved that great condition being drug-free, because this was a drug-free Mr. Olympia. We're also going to talk to Mike about some of his Mr. Olympia appearances and how he got into the sport of bodybuilding and when he won the Nationals and the Mr. Universe. So Mike's always a great interview, great personality. So we're going to be talking to Mike Christian shortly. And as I mentioned, we are brought to you by Redcon One. Everybody wants to be a champion. Everybody wants to be the best. And at Redcon One, they believe in working hard to achieve your goals. Whether it's killing it in the gym or you're running a six-minute mile, Redcon One has something for those willing to put in the work. They have a premier clinically dosed pre-workout called Total War that is the perfect companion to your workout to give you that extra push to break through your mental and physical barriers. And then after the workout, you can fuel your body with the revolutionary MRE. It is the only whole food complete meal replacement with protein coming from salmon, chicken, beef, and eggs, and the carb sources coming from sweet potatoes and oats, and it also contains 10 grams of fat from MCT oil. It is the best tasting complete meal you will ever have. So go to redcon1.com and try the very best that sports nutrition has to offer. Redcon One, the highest state of readiness. And because you are listening to the Bodybuilding Legends podcast, you can enter the discount code LEGENDS and get a 15% discount off your order. And also check out to see if they have their new MRE bar that they were supposed to be coming out with pretty soon. So go to Redcon One for those deals. And we're also brought to you by Old School Labs. I have been with Old School Labs now for several years. This is a supplement company that draws on the wisdom of the golden era of fitness and bodybuilding to offer unique supplements for the discerning athlete. Old School Labs is the only brand that I use, trust, and associate my name with. They are the brand that I used to win the Masters Natural Mr. Universe in 2012. And they're also the company that sponsors Breon Ansley, who is the new 2017 Classic Physique Olympia champion. And they're also sponsoring Sergio Oliva Jr. as he prepares for the Arnold Classic in 2018. So you can use the discount code LEGENDS12 and you'll get 12% off your order. Old School Labs supplements that make sense. And Old School Labs has a new product called Vintage Brawn, B-R-A-W-N. It is their new protein powder that draws on several forms of complete protein foods for their protein. So you want to check that out. Go to oldschoollabs.com and look at their new protein powder called Vintage Brawn. All right, I had a pretty exciting week this week. I got to meet 1968 Mr. America winner Jim Haislop. Jim, of course, was one of the most legendary bodybuilders in the 1960s. He actually ended his career at a very young age at the 1969 Mr. Universe in London, England, the NABBA Mr. Universe, where he won the tall class in the amateur division but lost the overall to Boyer Coe. Jim was, like I said, a legendary physique. Many people compared him to Steve Reeves because he had the wide shoulders, a small waist, he had big legs. Just a great physique. Some of the interviews I've done before with Chris Dickerson and Boyer Coe, they all raved about Jim Haislop because they competed with him back in the 1960s. So my friend Tony Bimonte, who I mentioned on the show before because I've been helping him with his diet, he made incredible progress over the summer. He just competed a couple weeks ago in his very first men's physique show after losing like 60 pounds and I think 6 inches off his waist. So Tony's father-in-law, Dave, is a good friend of Jim Haislop. So we went over to Jim's house, and we went to his garage where he's got his own gym set up, and I got to talk to him for a while. Jim is now 76 years old. He still looks fantastic. He's in great health. He told me he just had to recently stop squatting because his hips were bothering him, and he hated to do that because he thinks squats are the best exercise. So Jim's a very humble man, a real old-school bodybuilder. So I told him about the show. I told him I wanted to do an interview with him. He gave me his number, and he said to call him. So I'm going to try to get over there in the next week or two before the holidays and do a big interview with Jim Hayslop at his garage in Tampa, Florida. So I was really, really excited about that. In other news, out here in the Florida area, our district chairman for the MPC, the central district chairman, I should say, Pete Fancher, who has been serving as a head judge and a promoter and the district chairman for 27 years with the MPC. We just had the sanction meeting yesterday out in Orlando, and Pete announced that he is going to retire from the sport. This was his last year. He is stepping down. So that was a lifetime of commitment to the work for bodybuilding. He had judged many, many shows. He's promoted many shows. Imagine the amount of bodies Pete has seen over the last almost three decades. It's amazing how many people's lives he must have influenced and helped, how many people he must have supported. I always got along great with Pete ever since I moved here to Florida because he was an old school bodybuilder like me. We love talking about the old days. In fact, he was also friends with Jim Hayslop. Pete has known many, many old school bodybuilders. He's trained with many of these legends. He even knew Arnold back in the day. So his very first contest back in 1975, Pete competed against Robbie Robinson and Ivor Butcher, if you could believe that. So he's really seen the best. He's been around the sport a long time, and now he is finally stepping down. Him and his girlfriend, Diana, I think are going to get a house in Colorado in the next year. Probably not right away, probably sometime in 2018. So Pete will be stepping down. So as a tribute to Pete, I put together a video and just contained a lot of pictures of Pete and all the people that he's judged with and promoted shows with over the years. And that is on my YouTube channel if you want to go and check that out. After the video was over, we had some tributes from my friend Aaron Reed, who is a great young bodybuilder. He's 6'7", 310 pounds, and he's ripped. And Aaron, I've known out here in Florida since I moved out here in 2010, but he just recently moved out to California. So I reached out to Aaron, and he left a message. Eddie Robinson, who we had on the show last week, he left a message for Pete. Tim Wilkins, who is a stand-up comedian, he's also a MC at many of the shows out here in Florida. He left a great, funny message. And Peter McGuff, who's going to be on the show next week, he left a message for Pete Fancher. So that was really nice of Peter, because as I mentioned before, he isn't in the greatest of health right now. He's going through some chemotherapy for the cancer that he's going through. So I was glad he was able to take time out of the schedule. I know he probably didn't feel like doing that, but that was very nice of him to leave a message also. So as I said, if you go to my YouTube channel, you can check out that video. Or if you're friends with me on Facebook, I also have it on there. Oh, and my books are doing really, really well. Bodybuilding Heroes and Legends Volume 1 is doing really, really good. We had some really great sales on Amazon over the last month. It was the first month that it was out because it came out at the beginning of November. And then my other book, which is the MP6 Workout, which is also on Amazon.com, that is also selling really well. And that's only been out the last couple of weeks. So that, of course, is a workout book. If you guys are looking to change up your workout, the way I do it is I have cycles in there, 6-week cycles. And the first cycle is designed to increase your strength. And then using the same exercises, you can take that increased strength and then do another cycle, which is for building mass. So the difference, of course, is in the change in the repetitions. Of course, when you're building strength, you're using less repetitions. When you're building mass, you're using higher repetitions. So it's based on volume, how much volume you're doing, and I've got it all explained in the book. So if you're looking for something to change up your workouts, you want to increase your size, we all know that the best way to increase your size is to use the most weights possible on the basic movements for 6 to 10 reps, and this program will show you how to do that. So check that out. It's a pretty cheap book. It's less than 20 bucks, and it's on Amazon.com. And of course, the Bodybuilding Heroes and Legends is all about the major contest of the golden era of bodybuilding from the 1970s. This book concentrates on the shows from the 1970s. So you'll get all the competitions of Sergio and Arnold competing against each other. You also get the rise of Frank Zane when he won the 1977 Mr. Olympia. I've got stories in there about Cal Scalak and Mike Mentzer and Robbie Robinson and Danny Padilla and Tony Pearson. The book also has the 1980 Mr. Olympia and all that went on there. So it's really a great book. Check that out on Amazon.com. I did have some autographed copies, but unfortunately I'm out of them. But I should have some next month. So if you email me at naturalolympia@gmail.com, I could save you an autographed copy if you want to get that, and if you don't want to get it on Amazon.com. And I'm also really been busy doing a lot of consultations, training and nutrition consultations for people both online and out here in Tampa, Florida. So if you're interested in that, you can email me also at naturalolympia@gmail.com, and I will send you out a questionnaire and design a personalized training and diet program for you. A lot of people are really still going strong on this, and I'm really impressed that I've gotten a lot of consultation requests in the last week, seeing that the holidays are coming up, because most people will always wait until January 1st to start their diet. So I'm really glad that there's a lot of people out there who are getting ahead of it and are not going to hold off on starting their new program until the holidays are over. They're starting it now. In fact, one of the guys I'm working with, Eric, he's already lost 10 pounds in the last 10 days, and he's lost like an inch off his waist already just in the last 2 weeks. So it's just amazing how these can really help you out to make progress if you apply the right principles with your training and your nutrition. And I've got enough experience since I've been doing this my whole life, so I should be able to help you out no matter who you are, no matter what your age is or what your goal is, if you're trying to get bigger or if you're trying to get cut or if you want to go into a competition. Whatever you want to do, just email me at naturalolympia@gmail.com and I will be able to help you out. I did get a few emails during the week. This one was from Eric Rudin, and he says, "Always awesome stuff delivered by you. I love the history that you're providing." He was on my YouTube channel, which is at under my name, John Hansen. And I've got all the video interviews from the bodybuildinglegendshow.com website. Those are also on YouTube. And I just started putting some of the podcasts up on YouTube because I discovered that a lot of the people who go on YouTube don't listen to podcasts. So now they're available both on YouTube and on iTunes. And this one was from Derek Gadmintis. And he says, "I love the show / podcast, not just for the bodybuilders that I saw in the magazines back in the day, but for the other personalities around the sport. Their insights and stories are just as entertaining as the former competitors." All right. So thank you to Derek, and thank you to Eric for commenting on the show. If you guys have any comments at all, you want to send them to me. Again, that email is naturalolympia@gmail.com. Just send me your comments. I'll read them on the air. And if you could also review us on iTunes. Go on iTunes and rate the show. That would really help improve the status of the Bodybuilding Legends podcast, and we would really appreciate that. All right, I also want to mention we are brought to you by Florida Alternative Medicine, where age is just a number. If you want to feel great, optimize your energy levels, burn fat, and balance your hormone levels to maximize your potential, then go see the experts at Florida Alternative Medicine and Weight Loss. They have a certified and knowledgeable staff that will work with you to achieve your goals and get you the results that you've been looking for. They offer a wide range of services that ensure that you will not only look and feel amazing, but also be comfortable knowing that they're there for you every step of the way. They have very competitive pricing along with their quality products and services. So call them at 813-922-8939, or you can email them at info@flalternativemeds.com. Again, that email is info@flalternativemeds.com. Talk to Jeff and tell him that I sent you from the Bodybuilding Legends podcast. And if you want to call him directly, again, that number is 813-922-8939. If your hormones are out of balance, you're going to have a really hard time making progress. So if you feel like you need blood work and you want to get this checked out, talk to Florida Alternative Medicine and they will be able to help you out. All right. So that is it for the intro to the show. And here is our interview with Mike Christian about the 1990 Mr. Olympia. Enjoy. All right. Welcome back to the Bodybuilding Legends podcast. And my very special guest this week is Mr. Mike Christian, the Iron Warrior himself. And we are talking about the 1990 Mr. Olympia on this season of podcasts. Mike, how you doing?
I'm doing fine. How are you doing, John?
Good. Good to talk to you again, buddy.
Yes. Likewise, buddy.
Mike, how's the book going, first of all? I know the last time we talked a little while ago, a few months ago. I know you got a big book coming out, so how's the progress on that going?
It's going very well, slow but sure. So we're looking at probably early next year.
Oh, great. Yeah, I know a lot of your fans are going to be looking forward to that. Before we get to talking about the 1990 Olympia, let's talk a little bit about your background. I know we did a long interview a couple months ago, as I mentioned, and that's on the bodybuildinglegendshow.com website. But you grew up in a pretty tough environment, right? You grew up in Oregon and got involved in the gangs a little bit. So tell us a little bit about that, about how, what your background was like before you got into bodybuilding.
Sure. Well, I actually grew up in L.A., South Central L.A., before I moved to Oregon, back to L.A. when I got my stuff together. So a tough neighborhood, in the gangs, involved in the gangs at the very beginning of the Crips back in 1970, over 45 years ago. Mm-hmm. And I kind of went through a tough time and put it together, started working out, looking at the magazines, reading the magazines, studying them, going to go see them and seeing the stars, and then moving to Oregon and first started my bodybuilding career, Amateur Mr. Oregon, in 1976.
Okay.
And kind of moved back to California and took off from there.
We were talking, I talked to Lee Haney and Rich Gaspari about the 1990 Olympia already for this podcast, and both of them talked about how their genetics played a big part in their bodybuilding career, and that also goes with you too, because when we did our interview before, you said that when you started competing in bodybuilding, which I think back then was AAU, right?
Yes.
And you won the first 10 contests you entered, the first 10 shows you went in, you won first in all of them, right?
Yes, I did. Yeah, I got lucky.
So even you said you were kind of thin when you started training, but I mean, you must have had great genetics to respond to the weights real quickly, because if you won the first 10 contests, that's fantastic.
Yeah, I basically had broad shoulders, ripped, thin physique, but mm-hmm. I put on muscle very fast. And first year, I think bodybuilding, and on my first contest, I put on 10 pounds and kind of took off from there. I think I had great genetics for the sport. I mean, I happened to just learn my body early, know how many calories to eat and when to cut the salt and the water and the protein intake and all that, and kind of trial error guess the game, and learned very quickly in my career.
Did you have anybody helping you out back then, Mike? I mean, because I know, like you said, it was all trial and error back then. There was obviously no internet. There wasn't even any personal trainers or coaches or anything like there is today. So I know for the bodybuilders who were competing back then, we just had to learn as we went along. It was just basically what we read in the magazines, right?
Yes. But back then, John, I did have one guy that had placed in the top five in the AAU Miss America. His name was Chuck Amato. Mm-hmm. He was in the middleweight class. Great abdominals, great physique, and always in the top five. So he basically kind of steered me along the way, got me into my first contest, talked me into getting them little skinny shorts and going on stage. And I, coming from my background, John, that was kind of untypical for me, of course.
That was a big step, right?
He really had talked me into it, but like I said, you know, I got lucky. Well, my first the one, second, third, and went on from there. So, but he really taught me a lot. You know, I had good genetics, but he taught me the proper way of training. He taught me about the push-pull, how the pushing one day, pulling next day, and then legs. And so, you know, the routine goes on from there. But he gave me the proper form, the knowledge on the protein intake and all that. So I really learned a lot from him early in my career. I got to give him prop.
So what was your progress like then? Like, I remember when we did that interview before, you were saying you're putting on like 10 pounds a year, right? Was that the way it was in the beginning also?
Yes, it was. Yes. From day one, I started out 5'11", 177 pounds. And I put on probably about 7 to 10 pounds of muscle each year.
Was Chuck helping you with the posing also?
Yes, he did. Yes. Okay. He had the nice S shape, posing like Frank Zane. He learned that way and taught me that way. So he had the posing. He taught me the posing, everything from A to Z.
Okay. So what year did you move back to L.A. then?
1980. Yeah, I moved to, I came to Oregon in 77. Mm-hmm. And from 77 to 1980, won everything I could win in Oregon and Northwest, and decided it was time to go back to Cali and give it a try.
And you went right back to Gold's, right? You started right at Gold's when you moved back.
Yes. Yeah, I didn't actually go or train at Gold's before I left when I was in the gang and stuff. Of course. Came back, went right to Gold's, met the Barbarian Brothers, Robbie Robinson, Tony Pearson, Tamir was there, you know, Tom Platz, I mean, all the guys, and they're kind of like, wow, they look so tall in the magazine, so I thought all of them were 6 feet, you know, right, something. Right. And I was kind of, you know, 6 feet one, I was like the tallest guy there, but it was like, wow, okay, I'm here.
Yeah.
This is it. Barbarian Brothers, they kind of guided me throughout my way in the early beginning of going to Gold's Gym and in bodybuilding. They really believed in me and my physique and the way I trained, and told me the first beginning they thought I was going to go far in the sport.
So tell me a little bit about what Gold's Gym was like back then, Mike, because I hear, you know, today it's just, you know, when people go there now and the people that were around in the 80s and 90s, they said it's just not the same. But they said back in the 80s and 90s it was something else.
Oh, it was unbelievable. It was a hardcore. It was kind of rough on the edges here and there, but I'm just walking in the gym, the atmosphere, and go to the gym, and actually with Santa Monica then, and it was just unbelievable. You see, like I said, Platts, Robbie's walking around, working out, and I never would go up to any of them and ask them what to do. I was so afraid, intimidated them. So I kind of just watched and stared and watched the routine. And when they went to eat, I would go out and watch them eat and see what they ate. And I kind of learned from there. And I looked at their physique, John, and I said, okay, Arnold's physique is that like Frank Zane? Robbie's like this. And I put their physique and their training and their diet and looked at my own and kind of put together my own training and diet and, you know, so forth.
Yeah. You said it was a little rough on the edges. What do you mean by that? Was it just because it was such a hardcore gym?
Yeah, just hardcore. The equipment wasn't new, you know?
Yeah.
Like, I mean, back then, the Barbarian Brothers, you would see them spit on the floor in there. I mean, it was pretty crazy and hardcore, name calling, fight here and there.
Really?
Yeah.
But who were the guys that stood out for you back then? Who were the bodybuilders?
Back then?
Yeah.
Oh, of course, Robbie, like I said.
Robbie, right.
Yeah, he was a big influence and hero in my life back then. Tom Platz, Tony Pearson was there, Dave Johns, World. And World and Gold's was real close together after they moved to over there on where they moved it that now. And I used to go back and forth, but I mainly trained at Gold's Gym because of the atmosphere there and the music and just the, you know, camaraderie of all of us together. But I would go to a World Gym every couple months and hang out with Lou and Arnold and Bob Harris was there, you know, and other stars. Lee Haney would go there and train. So. But it was two totally different gyms, you know, hardcore, music. I really wasn't really into that, but I loved Joe Gold, Eddie Giuliano was a good friend, Zeebo, all of them were really good friends. They would always try to get me to come over and train there, but I just love the atmosphere and Gold's Gym. Then it's much better, of course, John.
Yeah, that's right. I was, for some reason, I was thinking World's Gym started later, but they were around, I think, since the late 70s, right? So they've been around.
Yes.
So it was Gold's and World's competing against each other then.
Yeah, for years. Yeah.
You were training with the Barbarian Brothers, and you said they really believed in you, and they gave you the confidence. When did you actually believe in your mind that you could go all the way and win Mr. Universe and be a pro bodybuilder?
I think it was in 1983 when I actually won the Mr. California. And that was, of course, like I said, through the Barbarian Brothers, giving the knowledge they had and the training and belief that I could be somebody and actually win and go all the way. And when I won the California, I really believed that, yes, maybe I do have what it takes, you know, to be a champion. So it was a tough road up until then because I had like a couple years, 80s, 83, that I didn't really win anything in California. And I thought I was going to, of course, go right from Oregon, you know, a big fish in a little pond.
Yeah.
California. I'm one of millions there, of course, John, but it took me about a couple, 3 years to put together and put on the mask and see the type of physiques they wanted in the California and the states. And took off from there.
A lot of people today may not realize it, but the Mr. California or the California Championships, that was a huge title. You know, it's probably the biggest state title in the country.
Yes, yeah. In all the countries, exactly.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
If you won Mr. Cal, you were favored to win the Nationals and Miss America and so forth. So, '83, I won that. And then '83, I placed third in the Nationals with Bob Parrish winning, of course, and Roy taking second, mm-hmm. me taking third. And I kind of felt, you know, I could have done a little better that show. So I came in the next year 110% better, bigger, harder. Chris Dickerson helped me with my posing routine, mm-hmm. Gave me, again, the pop confidence to go on stage and feel confident that I can win the way I presented myself and the way I wore my trunks, my tanning, you know, mm-hmm. so much that you have to do if you're going to actually go on to turn pro. And if you won the national, you're set up for a professional career, so...
Yeah, in '83, I remember you got kind of pissed off when you got third place at that Nationals.
Bad sportsmanship, I tell you. Pella was chasing me to give me my trophy.
Right, right.
She was handing out the trophy. I wouldn't take it. that video is so funny even nowadays. I'm like, what, Mike, come on. Just please. So...
Was it true that Lee Haney was off stage and he was telling you to go back on stage? Was that true? I think I read that somewhere.
Was it Lee Haney? I don't know if it was Lee Haney. A lot of people were trying to get me to go back on stage. I was just sued because they booed and, you know, and the prejudging, a lot of people felt like I was going to win and, you know, or do well. So I was kind of psyched up that I was going to win and came in there, and the third was kind of slap on the face. I said, for sure, first or second. The third, it just hit me hard.
But that was a tough Nationals, man. That was you, Liedemeyer, Harris, Matt Mendenhall, Gaspari. That was really, really tough class.
Yes, it was one of the best Mr. Americas ever. I agree. Yeah, hard, real tough competition. So you won that. But the following year, I came in there with Matt Mendenhall. It was another great year in '84. Mm-hmm. I came in there twice as good as I was the year before and came to win it. And I got lucky and won. And everything took off from there.
What was your mindset like for '84, Mike? Because after taking third, I'm sure you were super motivated to come back in '84. So take me through what you were thinking through that whole year of training from '83 until you went into the '84 Nationals.
I know, John, I was feeling like I was going to leave nothing on the table, that nothing was going to stop me. I was so determined, you know, I was going to win no matter what, no matter politics, no matter who, bigger, smaller, leaner, or whatever. I was going to come in the contest with my absolute best, the best package that I could present. And I just felt confident that if I did that, I was going to win. And I knew I was going to do that because I was not going to go in because of the politics. And, you know, I was like, you know what? I think I'm going to quit. And Chris Dickerson actually talked me into going in that year. He had talked to me for months. I took him like a couple months to start training for the show.
Oh, really?
'83. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Uh-huh. 2 or 3 months. Didn't train. So he talked me into it, and I just went in there with great determination and just knew I was going to win it. I felt so confident. I walked on stage, not cocky, but confident. You know?
Yeah, yeah.
And nobody was going to take this title from me this year, no matter what.
So, what did Chris say to you to get you psyched up for '84?
Chris said, you have what it takes. You train like a demon. You got the physique. He said, Mike, you just got to go in there and give it your all, absolute best. And he said, I believe you can win. That's what he told me.
Mm-hmm.
And I told him the politics and Roy Liedemeyer's on the cover and Bob Harris is all over, perfect symmetry. I can't be, you know. It was just so much, you know, with those guys saying it was so much better than anybody else. So, you know, why go into contest? I kind of felt like that before. The '84, and I kind of like put all that behind me. Chris made me say, you know, put all that behind me and say, you know what, you can win, you will win, just give it your absolute all.
Sure.
And he just gave me that determination drive that made me feel confident that I can win. I mean, I did everything. I mean, my toenails, my hair, my teeth, the tan,
right.
You know.
Right, right.
the posing routine. I had my own special music, you know, that wasn't done back then there at those years, you know?
Yeah,
so
yeah,
I just really gave it mine. I just knew I could win if I put a complete package together because I was close the year before, John. So I said, you know what? I can do it.
Yeah. Yeah, it's great.
You got lucky and I won America was a week. Next week was, of course, the Universe in Las Vegas. Mm-hmm. And then Joe Weider tried to talk me into going into Mr. Olympia. He said, Mike, you can be a triple crown winner. Win the America, the Universe, and Olympia. You know, and I said, I don't know, Joe. I felt like, you know, it wasn't a good idea for me. I wanted to kind of ride Mr. America and Mr. Universe tiles out and make money on that instead of going to Olympia, you know, placing third or fourth or fifth and, you know, not really utilizing my title. So I kind of said, no, I don't think I want to do that. But he really tried to talk me into it. He said, you can beat Lee Haney. You got more interesting muscles than that. And I told everybody else, of course, same thing, John.
But, yeah, it's cool you mentioned the attitude, because I did notice a difference in your attitude from 83 to 84. 83, you were very aggressive, but 84, it was more like you were smiling, you were confident. It was like you had the attitude like you knew you were the guy. You were going to win the show.
That's exactly right, John. It wasn't cocky. It was just confident, very confident.
And then, of course,
I put on 8 pounds of muscle in that 1 year. I was bigger. I was just hard. And my legs came up, so I felt really confident going that kind of.
And then going into the Universe the next week, you had to feel great because after winning that tough nationals, right?
Mm-hmm. But I knew it was going to be tough because I knew, remember, Barry DeMay took second to, so I knew Barry was going to be the competition.
Yeah.
So I knew I had to really, you know, give my all, and, you know, I came in there with confidence again, and my pose routine was unbelievable, and I had that charisma, I guess they say I have. I kind of took it right to Barry, pose, shot for shot. And, you know, I would hit my best shots. A lot of people in contests, they just hit shots, just be hitting shots. They'll do this Arnold shot or Lou Ferrigno shot or, you know, a Robbie shot, just be, you know, hitting shots. But I wouldn't do that. I would hit my best shots. You know, if I had three or four best shots, that's what I would concentrate on. Here and there, a shot. But I would always hit my best shots, which is, of course, my three-quarter back shot. My most muscular, my tricep, my back. So I hit my best body parts and my best poses when I was going for the championship with Barry DeMay. It was tight. It was tight that year, too.
Yeah, very tight. When you mentioned working with your posing with Chris Dickerson. So what does he do when he helps you with his posing? Does he figure out, like, what the best poses are? Do you work on the transitions?
Yeah, he actually just showed me how to stand and stuff. That was just the more help that he gave me. I actually went to a guy called, his name was Tony Balsina, and he was a choreographer. I actually went to him, we put together first the best poses that look good on me. Then we put it to music together, and then he put my routine together. So it was one step at a time. Best poses first, then the routine, and then the music. So
That's cool.
You know, it was like slow and fast, and booms and bams, and
it was.
I always had like those type of routines throughout my career.
Yeah, that's awesome. You went to a choreographer. I mean, you don't hear that anymore, you know. But you used to hear. I mean, you'd watch Pumping Iron. Arnold went to a ballerina instructor to learn how to move better. And, you know, and then you go to Chris Dickerson and, you know, you guys really worked on your posing back then. It was really a big deal.
Yes, they don't do that nowadays. They just go through the poses and wave their hands like, come on, say something, come on, I'm great. Mm-hmm. You know, like,
I hate that.
When you're great, you hit a shot, the photo starts going crazy and, you know, people start clapping and, you have to go like this. Hey, come on, give me. You know? I hit that three-quarter back shot, the most muscular shot. Boom. Lights go crazy. People go crazy. The lights, the cameras.
Right.
You knew what to do. Back then, you knew what to do. You know, it was very obvious. We never begged for it.
Like when we did our interview before, I asked you at the end of the interview, like, what was the most a memorable show you won. I think you said it was that 84 universe when you won the heavyweight class. Why was that so memorable? Why was that so important to you?
I thought it was going to be a hard contest. I knew it was going to be tight. You know, I won the America the year before, and I was really putting my all in that universe. You know, you win the universe, you get turned pro. So that was the most, you know, like, okay, I got to win this one. I put my all into it. Posing, I was a little down the day before, and a friend of mine maybe eat more carbohydrates than sugar, and put on an extra 3 pounds the last 24 hours before the show. So I really felt good on that win. It was like, wow. And you know, I actually beat, I think it was 54 people from 57 countries, something like that.
Wow.
They said. So
yeah.
It was something that I'll never forget, John. It was like, you know, dream come true.
Yeah, it's got to be like winning the Olympics, right? You're the best amateur bodybuilder in the whole world.
Yeah.
All right, Mike, so let's talk a little bit about your placings at the Olympia, because you turned pro in 84 after winning that universe, and then you went into the 85 Olympia, and you got fifth. And I think Lee Haney won, of course. Beckles was second. Gaspari was third. McAvoy was fourth. And then you were right behind them. And then you beat Barry DeMay again. He was in sixth. So how did you feel taking fifth place in your first Olympia?
I wasn't happy with it for sure. I was a big guy. I felt like I should have been further up there. McCauley beat me. You know, he has a beautiful physique, as we know, but he was a little bit shorter and like 40 pounds lighter than me. So I'm like, come on, Mike, you got to be better than this. Lee Haney kind of was afraid of me at that point. He said, you know, I was the only one he felt would give him a run for his money. So by winning the nationals and the universe, I was like, you know, like on high going to first Olympia. So when I placed in top five, most people would have been very happy, of course, John, but I was not happy. I wanted to be first or second for sure.
Yeah.
And then, big thoughts for the first Olympia.
What do you think about Rich coming up too? Because he came up a lot from 84 because he won the light heavyweights at the nationals that you won the overall. And then he increased his size by like 20 pounds and took second at the champions. And
he impressed me the most out of anybody, even more than Lee Haney, because the strides he made and improvements he made in that year and a half was unbelievable. So I give much props to Rich Gaspari. Even nowadays, he's a great friend and a great competitor, and he always has that good muscularity and strides in his glutes, and so high. Yeah.
Yes. So then the next year, 86, it looked like, I mean, you did those two shows in the spring. You did the LA Pro Championships and then the World Pro Championships, which was the Arnold Classic a couple years later. And you got second to Gaspari in both of those. But you looked a lot bigger in those shows, Mike.
Yeah, I actually did put on about 8 pounds for sure, John, on that show. And that was another tight one. Me and Rich went round and round.
Right.
It went either way, they said. So, it was a good contest. I had fun.
Now, did you think you deserved to beat him? Because you guys had totally different physiques. He was shorter, thicker, more stocky. You were taller, wider. But you had put on size for that year. Did you think you deserved to beat him that year?
I felt it could go either way. I really did.
Uh-huh.
If he won, I wasn't upset. If I won, I thought it would have been fair, too. I really felt either way. I didn't think I should have won. It could win either way, I felt.
Yeah, I think that was probably Rich's best look, don't you? That pro world in 86? I thought that was his peak right there.
Yeah, he was thick, it was hard, it's striated. Yeah, I agree. Probably his best look ever.
So then the Olympia that year, that was also in Columbus, and you got third behind Rich and Lee. What did you feel about that placing?
I was pretty happy there. It was my best place in the course of Olympia, my second Mr. Olympia, so I was real happy. Again, I put on another 6-7 pounds like I've been doing every year after turning pro. And posing was good, looked good, felt good, and it was a good year. I was happy with my placing, taking third there.
Okay. But then the next year, 87, you got fourth. You dropped down to fourth because Lee Labrada came in. That was his first Olympia. So Lee got third, and then Rich got second again, and Lee Haney won again. So that was disappointing, right, taking fourth?
Yes, it was very disappointing. I thought I was going to be in top three for sure, placing third the year before and going in that contest. I, placing, where I placed fourth behind LeBron, which is he's a great competitor and perfect for the league, basically, excellent chemistry. But, I had a bigger package than I thought I could have placed higher, but I was a little disappointed that year for time, for sure, no question about that.
How'd you think you looked in 87 compared to 86?
I think I was a little off. I was harder in 80 in the year before. In 87, I was a little bit bigger, I think, but I was a little softer. So
okay,
I felt that I could have been harder for sure.
Yeah, it's interesting though, Mike. Back in the 80s, the way the judging went, you could have like a smaller guy like McAway or Labrada who would place high, and it wasn't all about size back then. The judges were taking into account that shape and symmetry, and of course also the great posing too.
That's right. And posing was very important. And that's when I think the posing was counting somewhat. Of course, that dispersed after that year or so afterwards. They said they counted the posing round, and of course they never did. But yeah, the posing was counted. It looked good. You presented a good package. You deserve to be up in the top wherever, on each round. And that's how it should have been continued to be judged, I felt, John.
Yeah, absolutely. It was more entertaining to watch when those guys had great routines like that, and everybody worked on their routine harder. You're going to a choreographer, and Lee Haney had great routines. McAway, of course, was one of the best, and Labrada always had great routines. Even Gaspari really had great routines. Everybody,
That's right. Now it's just get on stage and dance, kind of now.
put your hand to your ear, right?
Yeah,
motion for the audience to clap for you, right? So, in 88, you didn't do the Olympia, but you did do the World Pro Championships in Columbus, and you won that, and you also won the Grand Prix, and the U.S. Grand Prix that was held in Los Angeles. Do you think that was probably one of your best ever shapes, Mike?
I agree. I think it was one of my best ever, condition-wise, posing. Everything was kind of put together. I geared myself to do that. I didn't go in the Olympia, but I thought I was going to go in them shows. And I won both those shows. I was very happy. I think that was the first really win I had since I turned pro. So I was real, real happy.
4 years,
because that bay had me up there with Lee Haney when I first came in. He's the only one that could beat Lee Haney. That was the whole magazine and the word all out, John. So, I went like 3-4 years and not winning the contest when they thought I was going to win everything. So I was a little disappointed, but I was so happy on that win in 88, back-to-back, those two wins. And I was like, yeah, I'm the man. I can do this.
Right.
The Iron Warrior is back.
Yeah, looking at your career, Mike, it looks like every time you placed lower, you came back more determined. Like 83, you lost, and then you came back 84 better than ever. And then 87, when you lost to, when you got fourth at the Olympia, you come back 88 better than ever.
Yeah, it's that Iron Warrior determination and drive,
Right.
I got from, beginning my bodybuilding career, coming from the gang background, just really being happy and turning my life around and seeing there's another way in life that you can be happy and people will respect it. So, that was great. Bodybuilding's been very, very great.
Yeah. Who were you training with back in the 80s, Mike? I know you started off training with the Barbarian Brothers, but who were some of the other training partners?
Oh, John, I went through at least 3 training partners every year.
Yeah. Oh, really?
Yeah, Charles Glass was one. The Barbarian Brothers, Don Smith was one. What's the Brazilian kid's name?
Oh, Luis Freitas?
Yeah, Luis Freitas. I trained with him. I went through, like I said, 3 years. I was a beast in the gym, so I would just train until I ran the poor guys down.
Yeah.
then I said next. And you know what, John? It's pretty close to the same way now. I don't know how I'm doing.
Still playing hard, yeah.
Yeah, I go through probably about 3 a year.
Oh, really?
Yeah. I don't know how I do it, but
still keeping up the same routine. Yeah.
Yeah, and these young bucks, and I tease them all the time, John. I say, you're 20 years younger than me. You can't keep up with me. What's wrong with you? You can't keep up with old man. I get right in the face. to make them dry. I'm just kidding with them, of course. But, I say it's the fact. You're 20 years younger than me. You can't do the same I'm doing.
Yeah. They don't train the same today as they used to, right, Mike?
Yeah, nowhere near. It all starts mental, as you know, John. We know that for a fact, you know. Mm-hmm. If you don't have it in here first, you won't be able to do it in the weight. So, yeah. You know, I knew before I went to the gym, I was dreaming about it. I know what I was going to do. When I got up on the weight, it was just basically just rewinding the tape and doing it. And to this day, I still have that form.
Right. Was Charles training people back then, Charles Bass?
When we were trained together, no.
Oh, okay.
No, we were actually training partners. I think after that year, him and I started training people at the same time. Because I had started training people. I was on the show, TV show, Married with Children. And I started training the Bundy, Miss Bundy.
Oh, really?
Well, yeah, well. I was training her back in the 70s and early 80s. And then Charles started training people when we both started taking off. And other people, of course, but...
Yeah,
we were the first ones to start actually training people back then.
Yeah, personal training wasn't big until, probably the 90s, right? 90s or
that's even right.
Late after that, yeah.
Mm-hmm. We started in the 80s, and then 90s is when it came real big, yeah.
Right. Charles had a great physique. A lot of people who look at him just as a trainer, they may not realize that he won that world championships in 83, mm-hmm. right?
That's right, yes. He looked great.
Great on
and the body. Trained together. Yeah, we trained together for that show.
Oh, really? Yeah. Okay.
Oh, yeah. Cool. Mm-hmm. Him and I was in the gym every day together. Mm-hmm. I used to call him cut like class.
Charles right.
Cut like class. And he used to do the splits and the
adapt. Yeah, because he had the gymnastics.
Jump on tumble around.
Right.
Oh, man. He had an entertaining routine, which they don't have nowadays also. He was a man.
Didn't he do a backflip at that 84 Olympia when he was in the Olympia?
That's right, backflips, yes.
Yeah, that's wild.
Pretty amazing.
All right, so now 89 Olympia, that was a bad one for you, right, Mike? Because you got sixth place. I think Benaziza beat you, and Labrada beat you, and Lee Haney, and Rich, and Vince Taylor also beat you. So you ended up in sixth place. And you were in great shape for that.
Yeah, it was good. It was just the competition was getting better and better, to be honest with you.
Right.
Yeah, you know, there was more people that were really made for the sport and was getting involved and had everything. And it looked good. They trained hard, and they deserved to be where they were at. You know, the sport was changing.
Where did you think you should have placed in that show?
I could have placed a place or so higher, but to me, it's always irrelevant because I always go for first. You know?
Yeah, it doesn't matter. Like,
fifth or third, you know, it's the same.
Right.
So.
Yeah.
I have that attitude, John. If I, you know, it's first or nothing, you know, third, fourth, fifth, it's all the same. Guys come to me every day in the gym and say, well, I should have placed this and should have placed that. Man, you shouldn't have won this darn thing, so it's really irrelevant, man. You know? And half of them think they look good, and they don't look good. And they ask me, and I'm so honest. I say, man, you don't look very good. I'm sorry, man. You know?
Right.
Hey, they're showing me pictures like, man, look at this. And I'm like, man, you know, you could have placed the place that's a little higher, but, you know, you're not tight enough. You're not hard enough. You're not presenting yourself well enough. You know, you got to get with a coach, get with somebody that can help you, buddy, you know.
Yeah.
I'm very honest. I've always been very honest, especially at Ghost Gym Venice. Mm-hmm. They would avoid me toward the contest. After I heard a few people's feelings, you know, Aaron Baker, some of the guys would ask me how they look. And I would say, man, you don't look good at all. You look like S or whatever. When it came time for the contest, it would avoid me like the plague. He said, don't ask Mike Chris, ask anybody in the gym but Mike. That's a true story, John. True story. I would tell like it is, you know?
Yeah, a lot of people don't want to hear it.
Yeah, good old days, man. I miss them.
All right, so now let's talk about 1990, Mike. That's what we're talking about with this season of the podcast. Now, they drug tested the Mr. Olympia that year. But before they did that, they drug tested the Arnold Classic, and you did both. You did the Arnold Classic and you did the Olympia. Now, when did you hear that they were going to start the drug testing?
I think the year before the Arnold Classic, or very close to it, like maybe 3 or 4 months before the Arnold Classic.
Okay. So just like the end of 1989 then.
Mm-hmm. Yes. So it was a difficult training. I had changed a lot of things. I was trying to, you know, put things together on how my physique was going to look. It wasn't reacting like it was reacting with the anabolic, of course. So it was real tough. But it seems like what I did, John, is I actually figured it out, and I did better, of course, in 1990 Mr. Olympia. But I took third in the show, but actually got second because of Sean Bray's disqualification. Exactly. Mm-hmm. But I look, of course, better in Olympia. I got more experience. I knew about carbohydrate loading and training. I couldn't train as hard as I did for the other show. And I got, you know, I put together and learned a lot and went in the 1990 Olympia. And I was in great shape. that was, like I said, the heartbreaker for me. You know, it was the show that I basically had to look in the mirror and say, Mike Christian, you will never be Mr. Olympia. It's time to, you know, do what you have to do to make money, make a living.
Now, when we talked at that other interview, Mike, a couple months ago, one thing you said, which I didn't know, was you said that you never really did the drugs in the off season. You only did them pre-contest. And you did that even throughout your whole career, even when you were getting ready for the Mr. Olympia. Yeah. So because you had that type of background with, you know, not using the drugs all the time, not being on them, was it easier for you to compete as a natural bodybuilder or compete drug-free? Like for when you did that Arnold Classic, the first one, was that a little bit easier for you?
A little bit easier because of that reason. But the only problem was, John, to be honest with you, I wouldn't hardly come in the gym and train at all.
Oh, okay.
I mean, it was very difficult to be in the gym, you know, 15, 20 pounds lighter, right?
Yeah.
Coming from out of town and coming there and go to the gym, you know, where it's the Mecca. And they look at you and they say, that's not my Christian, you know? And most bodybuilders can't take that, you know? So, they're like, they stay on the drugs all year round.
Yeah.
They don't want that, you know, and put on 20 back and forth with the pounds. So I would basically just not even go in the gym. He wouldn't see me in, you know, like 3 months before the Olympia or 3 months before the Arnold Classic. I would, you know, train hard and kind of put together and put on 15, 20 pounds, you know. And they would just see me grow every day. Every day it would get bigger and bigger. So people had haters and had people that respected it. Most of them hated, you know, because they would train all year round. I would come in there, you know, 3 months for the show and, you know, kind of get lucky and, you know, beat a lot of people. So it was just me. It worked for me and I did what, you know, worked for me, John, you know?
Right.
I do regret though now saying that I think if I would have gave 1 year of hard training, maybe I could have won the Olympia possibly, you know? I never ever trained 1 year. And of course, everybody else did. Lihaney, Rich Gaspari, everybody else did but me. So I don't know. You never know.
You said you would put on like 6 or 8 pounds of muscle a year, you know, when you were training for those Olympias or during your pro career. Do you think because you stayed off the drugs most of the time that when you went back on them, you had a much better response?
I think that's exactly right. Correct. Mm-hmm. Yes.
Okay.
It was just like the first time.
So now when you did that Arnold Classic in 1990 and now you have to be drug free, what changes did you notice? Was it just the recuperation factor or
two things, the eating factor and the recuperation. Before, I could go eating maybe 3 times a day, 0 carbs and all that stuff, and I still put on the muscle. Once it came a drug-free thing, it was a whole different ballgame. I had to make sure I ate protein throughout the day and make sure I had my carbohydrates higher throughout the day. I had to get enough rest. I couldn't train as hard. I had to kind of recoup a little bit more. Mm. There was a couple of different things, 3 to 4 different things that had to change and I had to adjust to go on the drug-free shows and try to look your best, of course.
How do you think you looked in that Arnold Classic?
I was happy with the Mr. Olympia, but I looked good in Arnold Classic. Like I said, the Olympia, that was the heartbreaker. I thought, you know, I mean, I look at Lee Haney and Lee LeBron and see a little fat there on their lower back. And I'm like, oh man, I'm gonna beat these guys. I felt I was gonna do really well that show. I could, you know, you could look and, you know, you could see people backstage and you kinda know where you're gonna place, you know. I was definitely tired in both of them guys and, you know, my symmetry wasn't bad, so Sean Ray looked good. I thought was I thought myself personally it was going to be between me, Sean Ray, and Pensato.
Okay.
So I thought we was going to be top three. I didn't see Lito Broad in there. Haney was up there, but I didn't see him winning.
Yeah. What did you weigh for the Olympia compared to the Arnold Classic? Because you looked a lot bigger for the Olympia.
I think I was like 6-7 pounds heavier at that Olympia. I think I was, 240, 42, somewhere around there.
Yeah.
It was a good show.
So what changes did you make for the Olympia then, Mike? Was it because you had the experience of doing it drug-free for the Arnold that you knew better how to train for the Olympia?
Yeah, exactly. Just what I said about the recuperation, eating more throughout the day, getting more rest. My training couldn't have been as hard, so I gained that experience from the Arnold Classic. You know, I felt I trained too heavy and too hard for that on, little or no drugs, of course. And then Olympia, I felt that I had to get more recuperation, not train as hard, not as heavy, get more rest in between, more rest at night, and just, change a few things that helped me do quite well in Olympia in 1990.
Okay. We just did an interview with Rich Gaspari, and he was saying, and I think I told you this in the first interview we did, there was a rumor that you were doing this drug called Defend that would prevent the drugs from being detected.
Uh-huh.
You heard that, right, too? That was a Muscle Mag, I think?
No, I never heard that, to be honest with you. First time.
Here, I'm going to play you this clip of what Rick said. This was the interview we did with him recently.
Bodybuilder that stood out, and he stood out very much, and that was Mike Christian. Mike Christian looked like the old Mike Christian, big as hell. I learned that he took product called Defend. That's what I learned too, yeah. Defend was a product where he would drink his drink. He stayed on a lot of whatever he stayed on. I would speak for him, but basically what I was told that he took stuff right up to, you can take certain steroids right up to a point. And then you take this product called the Defend, and it actually prevents the metabolites from coming out in your urine.
Woo! I never knew that, but
we had to do it at a specific time. Because now I got to do it now. This time, and he went into that test. So he learned how to beat the test, which I was like, "Fuck!" Which I couldn't do that, but I did it.
Hey. Whoa, man.
That was a year.
That's what I thought, Rich. I thought you won, too.
So wow, that was just a rumor then about that defend, huh, Mike?
No, I had heard about defend, but I was afraid to take it because you know it would work or not. So you take a chance taking something, and you gamble shooting the dice like Sean Ray did,
Right.
I just had too much to lose, so I just fool with it. No, I really just out-trained him, out-fought him, out-got more recuperation, and came in that contest with great determination with my good genetics. Mm-hmm. I got pretty damn good genetics.
Right.
I can train 3 months for a show and beat all those guys. No. So that's got to be some genetics going there, too, so. Wow, that's a great – I never heard that.
Yeah.
Rick said I should have won, huh?
Right.
He said he thought, wow, he said I should have won. That's what I thought, Rich.
that was the first time you had beaten Rich, right, in the Olympia?
Yeah, first time ever. Exactly, man.
Yeah.
That wasn't something that I was real happy, wasn't here or there. I was trying to win the Olympia, beating
Rich,
Some people live their whole career to beat somebody, like Dick Barry to me. He went his whole career. He wanted to beat Mike Christian. That was him. He says that even nowadays, But, Rich is great and everything. But, wow, thank you for playing it for me. I never heard that before.
Yeah. So where would you have placed what would you have had the placings then for the 1990 Olympia, Mike?
I think me, Sean Ray, and Bufato, Lee Haney, or me. Sean Ray, Lee Haney, from Fato, so on and so on.
Okay, yeah. What do you
know,
think?
Top three or four. Yeah. It's, you know, they're here, there.
I've asked this question of everyone. What do you think would have happened if the IFBB would have continued the drug testing? What do you think would have happened with the sport? Would it have been better or worse?
It wouldn't have went anywhere. Once people got to see the freaks with the anabolic steroids, big, heavy, thick, it was all over. People would never, it would never be the same. They wanted to see that every year, better, yeah, bigger every year. And that's, it wouldn't have went anywhere. I think the sport would have went down. I don't think it would have got better. People think it would have got better, Don. I don't see it. I think once they've seen them freaks and the big, thick, you know, muscular physiques, mm-hmm, I think they were more or less hooked. You know, that's what they didn't want to pay to see a swimmer, you know?
Right. But in the 1980s, they weren't really too freaky yet. You know, I mean, we didn't have like the Dorian Yates or the Nassers yet, you know, or Ronnie Coleman's. So do you think if they would have started, like they did that drug testing in 1990, I think if they would have continued with it throughout the 1990s, if the sport would have changed and we wouldn't have had those mass monsters, do you think that would have prevented that?
Yeah, I think so. Yeah. Okay. Yeah, I would say that for her, yeah.
Do you think that would have been better as far as like the popularity of the sport?
Yeah. No question about it. I mean, it's as we know, it's totally out of control now. It's mm-hmm. chemical warfare, as we know, so...
Mm-hmm.
For sure, sport would have been better.
Okay. Is that one of the reasons that you got out of it, Mike, after the WBF was over? Is that why you never went back?
Two reasons. I mean, everybody that went back to Joe Weider after the WBF never placed high. Yeah. I mean, they placed, you know, I mean, none of them should have won, so I can't really complain, but maybe Mike Quinn or Gary Stridham said they placed fifth, they could put third, but it's just, to me, it's you know, irrelevant. Mm-hmm. But they never got anywhere near the props they should have forgotten. And I wouldn't gonna like to come back and be a whipping. I'm glad I didn't go back. It was time for me to get out. I felt, you know, the game was changing, and I think I made the best move and decision for me at that point.
Yeah. Did your motivation change too? I mean, was your desire not as much as it was before when you threw out
exactly.
the
80s? Yeah. Yes. Desire was gone. Mm-hmm. It changed back in probably 89, somewhere around there. Yeah. I just kind of lost the drive I had. It was all basically just for money. I was going for the $100,000.
Oh, money. Really? Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. It was kind of, you know. Yeah, 89, 90 was kind of just, you know, to be Mr. Olympia or just, you know, get the money basically, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it definitely changed.
Is that one of the reasons that you decided to go to the WBF because of the, you know, the money they were paying everybody?
Yes. Uh-huh. I actually, like, I think I mentioned to you last time, John, mm-hmm. I actually went to Joe Weider before I joined the WBF, which yes. none of the competitor did but me. And I told Joe, because me and Joe were good friends. I used to go down and talk to him all the time in Woodland Hills. I said, Joe, I said, you know, they're offering me $300,000, X amount of dollars. I said, you know, I don't expect you to give me the same, Joe. But I said, I have a family. I want to buy a house. You know, I want to do things in life. I need some type of income because I can't go to the bank and tell them I'm going to be in the top five in Olympia and I'm going to make $100,000 this year on guest appearances in contests. So I just asked him, I said, can you, help me out and give me something? Joe looked me right in the face and said, Mike, I won't compete. That was his words.
Hmm.
So I said, okay, Joe. And I went about my business and made my decision from there. Nice. But I did actually, I went to him face to face, man to man, and told him, you know, what I'm thinking about doing. I don't want to do this, Joe. I'd rather stay with you because I love the IFBB. I love you. I love what you've done for bodybuilding. I said, but I have to make a living. I have kids. You know, I have to look at my future.
Yeah.
And I was very honest with him, John. You know, we talked about it. And he looked me right in the face and said, I won't compete. That was his final words. And really never spoke after that.
No, really? What was it like working with Joe Weider? Because I've heard a lot of stories about him, and I never got a chance to meet him.
It was a blast with John. It was a total blast. Every time you saw him, he was up. He was right there. He would show you this and that and talk to you about training and dieting and how they did in the old days and what Arnold and Lou and, you know, they had did Sergio and Rick Wayne and, you know, Samir, how they would go into competition, their mindset, you know, how they posed and how they turned this and did certain things. And he would show me how to pose and hit poses correctly. And I loved him. He was a great guy. He was always was in your corner, 110% behind each individual when he was with you. And he always had a great attitude, and he kept me with a winning attitude also.
He really loved the sport, didn't he?
Yes, he really did, John. No question about that. No question. That's why I didn't want to leave. It broke my heart. It actually broke my heart.
I heard he was like a tough businessman, but they said that there's nobody that loved bodybuilding more than Joe Weider. I mean, he was just like a big fan of the sport.
Yes, yes, exactly. But he's a tough businessman. That we all know, I guess.
Yeah.
He didn't want to give us any money.
You came up in a good time, though, Mike, in the 1980s, because I guess you got to see a lot of, you know, the guys that, you know, we all looked up to, like Sergio and Arnold and Lou. I mean, they were still around. They weren't competing,
Robbie.
Maybe. Yeah, right, Robbie. They weren't competing back then, except for Robbie, but at least you got to see that tail end of that era, and then you guys created your own era, you know, you and Lee Haney and Gaspari and all you guys.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, like, what, you know, two things that stand out to me back in that era was when I got on stage, I will forget what year it was, Sergio, he came, you know, he came, he tried to make a comeback. Yeah. What year was it, 85?
84, the one 84. In New York.
Yeah. Oh, man. And I got on stage, and I placed higher than him, and I just wanted to cry.
Him and 85, Rodney, yeah, Rodney, when you competed.
They were my guys. They were my, you know. I would look at those guys in the magazines, John, when I was growing up, and say, I could never beat these guys in a million years. You know, look at the biceps. Look at the waist, you know.
Then
actually going to the show and, you know, placing a little higher than both of those guys, I swear to God, I wasn't elation. I honestly wanted to cry.
Yeah.
You know, because they weren't at their best, and at their best, I couldn't stand nowhere near them. No question about that, you know.
Yeah.
So that was a heartbreaker for me.
You did beat Robbie at his best.
Yeah. Yeah. But that's, I don't know, not at his best.
No
question. No question about it. No. Rod was good back when I beat him, but no, he wasn't at his best. No question.
Yeah.
But that's one thing that really stood out on my career too, along with the 90 Olympia, winning the world championship in 84. It's like, you know, getting out the gang and putting my life together. It's like four or five things which I speak about in this book. You know, I mean, I came from a dysfunctional family. Mm-hmm. Was in the gang, was leader of the gang. You know, had my own sportswear company, multi-million-dollar sportswear company, platinum everywhere. I've been all over the world. I've done so much with bodybuilding and through bodybuilding. It's just, it's still like a dream.
Yeah.
I've been all over the world three times.
Yeah.
A third, fourth passport, you know. It's like, but there was two different Mike Christians, you know. There was me from the ages of being born to 20 years old.
Mm-hmm.
And then after 20, me actually getting into bodybuilding and going on stage and winning my first contest and kind of going from there. But it was such an incredible feeling, because I had a feeling of when I was in the gang, John, when I would, because back then, if you knocked out somebody, everybody would go nuts. Oh, you knocked out him, you know. We're all excited. And I got that same exhilaration when I won my first contest, when the pitchers start snapping and, you know, I clapped and, you know, Mike Christian. And it was the same feeling. So I went from that negative feeling to that positive feeling. And that's when I zero right in on it. That was it. I need that feeling every single time, you know.
Right, right.
And that's what kind of gave me the drive to become who I am today.
Yeah. Well, you made your imprint on the sport, that's for sure. I mean, I did an interview with Roy Callender a few years ago, and we were talking about the 81 Olympia. And I told him, I said, you know, when the condition that he was in, and Tom Platz and Danny Padilla, I mean, even though those guys placed lower than they felt they should have, I was like, you know, the condition they attained in that contest, we're still talking about it 35 years later, 40 years
That's
later,
right.
We're still talking about it. You know, it never goes away for the bodybuilding fans, you know?
Exactly, John. Even to this day, exactly, yeah.
Thank you again for joining us for another interview, Mike. Thanks for coming on our podcast and talking about the 90 Olympia as well as all your other stuff. We look forward to seeing your book next year. And I still see on Facebook you're hitting it hard. You still look great for 61, 62, you said?
62. I'll be 63 next February.
Yeah, you still look great, Mike. You're still the Iron Warrior. We look forward to hearing from you again, buddy.
Thank you. And we'll talk to you guys later. Take care, everybody.
All right. Take care, Mike.
Bye.
All right, thank you for listening to another episode of the Bodybuilding Legends Podcast. Thanks to Mike Christian for his great interview. Next week, we'll be joined by the legendary Peter McGuff. Peter was a writer for Joe Weider's Muscle and Fitness and Flex Magazine, especially for Flex Magazine. He was the editor-in-chief of that, and he also wrote a little bit for Muscle Mag International, and he's a great historian of the sport. He's got some great stories to talk about, and he was at the 1990 Mr. Olympia, and he wrote a 10,000-word article about it. So Peter has a lot to say about that contest. So I'm really going to look forward to talking to Peter McGuff next week. Thank you to our sponsors, Redcon One, Florida Alternative Medicine, and Old School Labs for sponsoring this episode and this season of the Bodybuilding Legends Podcast. We will see you guys next week. Take care.